I was revisiting a story which I had written based on true events. I was fascinated by it. It was the story of a pharaoh of Egypt called Akhenaten. Akhenaten. So Akhenaten, when he was a young boy, he had a brother, elder brother. The elder brother was athletic, well-built, handsome, good-looking, while Akhenaten was not. He was skinny, bony, nothing to look at. So basically ignored and denied his father's love, because the father was pretty clear who would be the next pharaoh, which of the two sons. And so the father's attention went on his brother. All the love, adoration, training. Now, Akhenaten had a very peculiar habit. He would tell the guards of the palace to take him out into the desert for hours, hours and hours. So his mother was very concerned, and she would ask the guards, what does my son do alone? And they said, the only thing he does is looks at the sun. He does nothing else. And so she found that this child was special in his own way. So she didn't stop them from taking him, but she said, don't come home very late. But as time went on, he got more and more lost in this trance-like state. He could not help it. It was irresistible for him. And the disgust that built up in the father's heart for this son grew, because he thought that now this child is really useless. I've really lost him. And so the father was now absolutely clear who would be the next pharaoh. Surely not a child who's going to go into the desert and stare at the sun all day. And then who stepped in to the picture? The master of all, destiny. Destiny stepped in. Aage aajao na. And Akhenaten's brother died of an illness. Suddenly, all the father's plans, hopes, overnight shattered. And who should find himself the pharaoh? Someone who never wanted to be the pharaoh. Someone who did not have the qualities of being a pharaoh. This was the card he was dealt by destiny. Now what? Now what? This young prince who became a pharaoh, it is believed, one day when he went into the desert, he came back and the guards of the palace were shocked, because they could see his eyes were blazing with the light of the sun. Absolute brilliance. He was shining. And that is when he said, from today onwards, I will be called Akhenaten. Aten is the sun. And I will be called the one belonging to the sun. Now, what Akhenaten did, it was pretty clear to him that the sun represented unconditional love, because it shines its light on everyone. It makes no distinction, no good or bad as far as the sun is concerned. No one is less, no one is more, rich and poor, doesn't matter. The only visible God, in our own scriptures, the sun is referred to as universal Brahman, that God which can be seen with the eyes. And he was fed up of the traditional modes of worship in the Egyptian temples, because the temple priests were reigning supreme, filling up their coffers, taking advantage of superstitious beliefs. And he could not bear it anymore that the public was being made such a fool. Something which went against his nature. And what was his nature? When he and his wife would go out of the palace grounds in their chariot, he would get off the chariot, intermingle with the common people, hug them, ask them how they were. He would become friends with the guards. There was no distinction. He could not help himself as far as embracing people was concerned. It was his nature. It was that which he worshipped. And so he started building temples dedicated to the sun. And that is how his downfall began, because of two reasons. One is, as we know, life is duality. People loved him the guards loved him, but there were those who said, what kind of behavior is this? Is this becoming of a Pharaoh to go down the chariot and hug common people? Is this what a leader is about? And the temple priests were most upset because he was building new temples dedicated to the sun. And so a fight ensued between the temple priests and Akhenaten. And being the Pharaoh, he then said that all the other temples will be destroyed because y'all are taking things in your own hands and only the sun will be worshipped. That is what started happening. And the city of Akhenaten, it was called, the sun city was built, the city of the sun. Masses were jubilant. They felt free. They felt unrestrained. They felt loved. But the temple priests and the command they had, that was crumbling. And so, as most famous stories go, they connived with the temple guards and had him arrested. And there are two theories. One says he was assassinated. The other says he spent the rest of his days in prison. And all the temples he built to the sun were destroyed by the temple priest. And this is the story of Akhenaten. And when he was asked, when he was in jail, why did you do it? You see, his mother was his pillar of support and his wife. They stood by him through everything. And he told his mother that when I would go into the desert, I would have the vision of the one and only. The one and only. That is what I tried to do. That's all I tried to do, to attempt to make people see that. Now, in this entire story, what can be seen is the hand of God, because that hand of God is operating in all our lives. You see, Akhenaten had to be born weak. He had to have been born weak because that set up his conditioning. He knew what it was to be unloved by the father. So the ball was already rolling. Circumstances were set. Where did this child get this fascination to look at the sun from? Who gave it to him? Why was he chosen and not someone else? It could only be a higher power. And the hand of destiny was so strong that the most likely candidate was extricated from the scene by the hand of God. And he was made Pharaoh. And someone with good intentions, pure intentions, was pulled down. Which basically means everyone did what they were meant to do based on the blueprint they came with. Everyone in this story, whether it is him, the brother, the mother, the father, the guards, the common people, the temple priests, everyone came and played the role assigned to them. We in our lives feel persecuted by what we say to some people and we get misunderstood. Can you imagine someone in his shoes? All he was doing was trying to spread love. Can you imagine the magnanimity of this situation he was placed in? What did I do wrong, mother, is what he asked his mother when he was in jail. What did I do wrong? Now, in the charter of the city he built, it's a very curious thing. One of the points was, this land belongs to nobody. One of the points. Everyone is equal. How many centuries ago? And if some of you are familiar with the city of Auroville in Pondicherry, and you are familiar with a structure called the Matri Mandir, which is like a golden geodesic dome. You can Google it. Which looks like the rising sun, which is at the center of Auroville. The point in that charter is this land belongs to nobody. And very curiously, the mother of Pondicherry, whose vision this was, in one account that I read on the internet, she has said that she was the mother of Akhenaten, Queen Tai. Now, the point I'm making is not about past lives and so on. The point is that when there is a movement in consciousness towards a certain aspect of the divine, it knows its job. We can say It wasn't the right time. It was premature. People were not ready at that time. But the movement goes on. The march goes on. And that is why even Auroville is called the city of truth. Even that destroyed city was the city of truth. Fascinating. I used to find the story very fascinating. When I would go in my younger days, 25 years ago almost, and I had this insight, you know, that there was a connection between these two cities. People would laugh at me. Then I met one devotee who was with the mother, a school teacher. And I told her, I said, ma'am, it's so similar, the historical account in this. And she said, you are absolutely right. This is what the mother used to tell us. Now, of course, with the advent of the internet, you can find documents and everything is there. And someone who was trying to eradicate duality got labeled with the most extreme words. So one half called him the most kind pharaoh, the most benevolent pharaoh, the greatest idealist in the world, the one and only love a pharaoh could give. And the other half, insane, mad, crazy, polarities. You could call him crazy because he said, nobody in my kingdom will be punished. They all deserve to be loved. Society will collapse. So from society's standards, crazy. As far as he was concerned, he had the full understanding. For example, that a thief would be a thief as per his conditioning and nature, which was his destiny. That doesn't mean he is to be condemned. Both points of view. And we pick one. That is how life and living is. He called for an end to hostilities with neighboring states. Big problem. They all wanted to invade nature. Now the point is in our own lives, how polarized are we? Have we segmented people into those we love and those we hate? Or those we love and those we love less? Those who make me angry, this side. Those who don't make me angry, this side. Those who push my buttons, this side. Those who don't push my buttons, this side. We will be doing it all our lives. This friend said this about me. How dare he? How dare she? I'm not going to talk to this friend anymore. This relative did this, said this. I'm not going to call this relative up. Why should I? So your reaction depends on the other's action. You are caught in the karmic loop. He did this, so I'm going to do it. Your nature, your conditioning is what God gave you. That person's nature, that person's conditioning is what God gave that person. And you are trying to be somebody you're not, just to give back to the other. Isn't it quite ridiculous when you look at it? And we want the other to change. And we say, oh, this person has not changed on me since I met them last. We want the other to change. Who the hell are you? God knows his job. Whom to change, not to change. Let's talk about your own attitude to people. Let's forget about others changing or not. True change is within means this, that I make no more demands on the world. I can express my feelings to someone if I feel they are hurting me or saying bad things about me, certainly. But then I stop there. Then I know now, whether this person changes or not is in God's hands. So then I find that I am established in peace more and more and more. In my daily living, I accept people the way God created them. I don't try to tell God to do his job. I accept it. I'm not meant to get along with this person, so be it. I'll keep trying till the day I feel I can't try anymore. So now I'm concerned with me and my actions. That itself is a very big shift. Nisargadatta Maharaj said something very potent. He said, there's nothing wrong in my world. There's nothing wrong in my world. Can we say that about our lives? Which means that everything is precisely the way it is by the will of God. Now I do what I feel I should do. That is the next step. But when I do that now with this understanding, I find I'm no longer as anxious and stressed as I used to be because I'm not directing my hatred and condemnation towards an individual. I am dealing with the situation. I am more objective about the situation. I am more neutral about the situation. And I find now that my reactions are no longer blind. I find that there's a gap now. Earlier, it was unconscious tennis match going on with someone. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Now it doesn't happen. I say what I have to say. I respond rather than react unconsciously. You see, two big influences in my life. One, my spiritual teacher, Ramesh Balsekar. The other, Shirdi Sai Baba. Both laid emphasis on relationships. Shirdi Sai Baba called it Rinanubandhan, the bondage of relationships. That you have Rinanubandhan with everyone in your life whom you come across. Rameshji said daily living is relationships because none of us are sitting in a cave, alone, isolated. And that is where your peace is to be found. Why? One is the obvious reason of harmonious relationships. The other is not so obvious, which is that ultimately all relationships are, one, your relationship with yourself, which basically means if you find that you are criticizing people more than appreciating them, you are criticizing yourself. And two, your relationships with people determine your relationship with God. Why? Because God made them. So if someone comes to you and tells you, relationships and all forget, too basic. I'm going to teach you states of samadhi, deep meditation, wonderful spiritual experiences. I would be wary of that. And that was the acid test which Sai Baba gave one of his devotees who invited him home for lunch and laid out a big spread. And he said, I will come tomorrow. I'll certainly come. And nobody showed up. And she was fuming, furious. And she said, I made all this food for you and you didn't come. He said, I did. I was the dog who was barking outside your door at so-and-so time. You didn't feed me. Relationships. Ours is selective process. Near and dear ones and the ones who make us happy. That is why Joel Goldsmith said, it's too easy to pray for the ones we love. Try praying for the ones you don't love. Wish them well. Pray for the ones who are troubling you. We don't know what troubles they have. You see, because when this starts happening, you find your mind is no longer dancing the jig as far as people are concerned. Otherwise, we are constantly thinking of all this. I have a friend. Every time we meet, the topic of discussion is his bad relationship with his father. Every time. Anything I try and say, because the emotion is so strong, it overrides what I say. So who is perpetuating the story? What is the content of his mind? He can't help it for sure, because it's troubling him so much. But that is the content of the mind. And when this teaching steps in, that starts getting cleared out. Then you find your mind is at peace. And by and by, you find that peace is not a fickle peace anymore, which gets disturbed by the next bad happening. It's stabilizing. It is a peace which is going beyond the polarities of war and peace. It is stabilizing. That's becoming my natural state. That natural state itself is samadhi. It is not an experience, because experiences come and go. And we will find that whenever we are thinking too much, there are thoughts of how should I survive. It's all about self-preservation. The me wants to survive. The me wants its opinion shared, its opinion known. This is who I am. If someone says something and you don't like it, it's all these wheels are starting to turn. This person had said something to me and all this starts. The churning of the mind. It's about survival. Survival of my ideas, my beliefs, my concepts. That is a threat because I've met someone who's threatening all that. Actually, relationships, I don't tire of saying it, are your greatest teachers. And we to have our missiles in our mouth ready to shoot them out when someone says something. We are prepped for war. Once someone asked me that I'm too quick to react. What can I do so that this quickness does not happen anymore? I've understood everything. I'm too quick to react. So I said, okay, just visualize that someone has put a lock on your mouth. She came back, didn't work. I said, theek hai. She said, I want another tool. I said, okay. I said, when you were hearing that, just imagine you don't have a body. Doesn't work. Came back. I said, okay. Next tool. She was wanting a tool. I couldn't tell her God's will, let it happen and all that. She was insisting, I want a tool. Then I said, when you hear this person saying something, you start thinking what they will say, what you will say to them. Just think about it before saying it. And she came back and she said that this worked because I started thinking of what to say before saying it, and then I didn't feel like saying it. Which means the charge, because a wedge had been placed now in that unconscious action-reaction loop, something had now set in which created that gap. And then she said, the next day I felt what happened the previous day was so pointless. It was in any case just one more incident, didn't have that much value. But in that moment, it has all the value. When you look back, you say, my God, I lost my cool on such a thing. I lost my head on such a thing. It's when you look back, amazing. And relationships doesn't just mean relationships with people. Your relationship with what happens in your life. What's going to happen today after you leave from here in your life? Your relationship with that. Which means, how do you relate to that? Something good happens, something bad may happen. Pleasure may happen, pain may happen. How do I relate to that? Is my relationship with that. Every time a sage sees a flaw in someone, the sage knows that flaw has been placed by God. It is not the person's doing. It may appear that way. It may appear that way. But the sage knows that the circumstances this particular being faced in life, the conditioning it received, has made these so-called flaws. I am calling it a flaw. I'm giving it a label. But it has been placed by God. And the realization happens at the same time. I too have my own flaws. The flaws are different. Different strokes for different folks. This person's flaw is so and so, whether it is a parent, relative, friend, child, whatever. I have my own set of flaws, which is slightly different based on my conditioning, the way God made me. Theek hai. It's okay. Aage bado. Walk on. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is going to become perfect based on your idea of what perfection is. Not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. You'll remain frustrated. It ain't happening. You are concerned with your peace of mind. And these teachings are there to reveal aspects of that peace. Where's your peace to be found? It reminds me of when one social activist went to Maharaj. He said, I do this, I do that. Activist has to do. And Maharaj told her, you think that the world needs saving, but actually, it is the world that needs to be saved from you. What does that mean? All you have projected onto the world, onto people, how they should be, how they should behave, all the labels I have stuck on everyone's foreheads, that is what the world needs to be saved from. Anyone would like to share anything?
So, I feel like nature of life is duality, right? There's going to be harmony, there's going to be disharmony. So my sense is this teaching somewhere like has a preference towards peace of mind, which is naturally harmony. And that sort of, in my view, it's always going to be harmony and disharmony. And that's always been the case since the test of time. So isn't it better to just accept that and see that for what it is? Because
I think these are two different things. The flow of life will be harmony and disharmony in that sense. Good things happen to me, bad things happen to me. Pleasure happens, pain happens. That is the flow of life. But the peace, what you are referring to, is not that peace which is on the polarities. The peace is that peace which is unshaken no matter what happens in life. We are talking about that peace.
That existing with disharmony and everything else.
What is disharmony? Let's say I receive news. My business client has left me.
or my girlfriend has left me or whatever, right? Now, what is my relationship with that event? It's not a happy event. There's going to be pain, right? But now, either I see it and have a total acceptance of the will of God that this happening had to happen and it resulted in pain, right? Or I get invested in that story. I start blaming the client, blaming the girlfriend. Why did she do this? I was so good. I did this. I did that. I service the client very well. And this all churn is going on in my mind, destroying my peace. This teaching will not take away your pain, but it doesn't mean there won't be peace. Otherwise, what is the difference between someone who is not exposed to the teaching and has imbibed these concepts and someone who is unconsciously being buffeted between the banks of pleasure and pain? That can go on all your life. So are you asking, is it the same thing? It's not the same thing.
So there will be disharmony, but without the added layer of suffering.
There will be a happening in life, which I perceive to be disharmonious, obviously. If I'm driving and someone hits my car. But
that is always going to happen, right? There are always going to be these two polarities.
Exactly. But when I accept by and by, it had to happen. Even if that driver was drunk, he had to hit my car. I'm no longer battling with the happening. We tend to battle with that happening and get into this blame game and condemnation and judging and all our energies invested there. When we are free of that, a happening we see as a happening, it causes pain, we deal with it to the best of our ability and leave the rest to God. And that is how we start living our life. But isn't that a beautiful space to be in? I wouldn't discount that. I may have that one relationship which is really troubling me. But even in that, I found my peace because I've truly seen that this person is playing out their script. Now I decide, do I want to be in the relationship? Do I have the option of stepping out of it? Whatever it may be. I weigh the pros and cons and take a decision. But when there's no longer that angst of doership, this person is doing this to me and therefore I hate him. When that is gone from the equation, I am only feeling pure pain. Why am I feeling the pain? Based on my nature also. Maybe I'm the sensitive type. God made me a certain way. Someone who was rough and tough may not feel what I am feeling. So be it. So I'm experiencing the pain, but there is no story in it. And life is pain and pleasure. My teacher would say more pain than pleasure. No doubt.
So these preferences we make and these healthy discernments we make are absolutely necessary, right? Like there's no way we can like have this unconditional love, like the story you mentioned. And it seems to me like whenever I try to do that, I get crushed by life for sure. Because, I mean, it's a practical teaching, right? Like we are going to see situations that disturb us. And
sure. You know,
do you want to be a part of that? Do you want to like discern what you want to do? So all that.
That is the process. But you see, one big thing also happens. If there's someone in our life who we have really not gotten along with, earlier we were blind to their good qualities because it was so overwhelming, the pain they created for us, that part got ignored. Now we are more open. We can see a person for who they are. They're good, they're bad as far as we are concerned. You see, someone else may not get triggered the way you are getting triggered by a particular person because they are built another way, right? So we are able to really see the person in totality, that it is this one point which is troubling me in the relationship, but all these other points are there, other qualities are there. So it makes me more open as a person, more welcoming, more open. It is not about being crushed as such. Yes, if I have a toxic relationship, I have to decide my limits and I have to decide at what point do I step out if I have the option. That is the mind which is going to figure it out. But I will still do so knowing that this person has been dealt this hand by God. In my life, this person is the role of the troublemaker. It is a role and I have to deal with it to the best of my ability. And I'm surprised when I find I have no ill will left towards this person. I wish them well. I truly wish them well. May God fulfill your dreams, your hopes, your desires. I really wish it from the bottom of my heart. We were not meant to get along. That is another story. When that starts happening, that is clearly an indication that I have found some degree of peace.
I have a question. What is the role of free will in the scheme of things you have just explained? Sir?
What is the role of free will in this destiny scheme of things that you have explained? Is there no meaning to it?
There is a full meaning to it.
Can you please?
You see, because free will is the mechanism of daily living. Let's say I go into a shop and I have to buy a shirt. I have to use my free will to pick the shirt I like. Anything happens in life, it gives me a couple of options. I have to decide and pick one. That is my free will. So free will is the mechanism of daily living. Supposing I have to meet a friend and my car tire is punctured, I have to take decisions. Do I take an Uber? Do I walk if it's nearby? So be it. I'm exercising my free will. But now the understanding is that free will is only the mechanism of daily living. What is my free will based on? It is based on my nature and my conditioning. What I was taught in school, the concepts I imbibed, they made me who I am. And on that basis, I take a decision. So if all these factors which make me who I am were not in my control since childhood, is it really my free will? That realization comes. It doesn't mean it is worthless in execution. But the understanding is this free will which I placed on a pedestal all this while, that I am in charge of my life, that I relook at. Now I understand my free will is not truly my free will. Yet I have to exercise it. And I know from my own life's experience, how many times I've exercised free will, the results have been horrendous, completely unexpected. I exercised my free will. I thought that there'd be a certain outcome, the outcome was something else. So even that outcome, I cannot decide what is the value of this free will, this very precious free will of mine.
If you don't action and reaction, cause and effect, call it karma, call it destiny, whatever leads to. It does not mean that you don't try, right?
You have to exercise your free will. That is the nature of life and living. And you will. We are just talking in words and concepts.
If you don't, then one tends to become fatalistic.
Yes. But even that is a doing, because the ego thinks, now I won't exercise my free will. You see, that is how the ego is. It's the mischief maker. Now I can decide not to exercise my free will. It's crazy.
That's also a decision.
Yeah. So the sage knows that I have to decide moment to moment. I have to take decisions. But the sage knows that I don't breathe. The breath is happening. Blood is running through my veins. I don't do it. It's not in my control. I'm sitting on the earth, which is spinning. I'm not controlling it. Night and day, I'm not controlling it. Then what the bloody hell am I trying to control? I can't even control falling asleep. Deep sleep happens. I slip into deep sleep without knowing it, and I wake up in the morning. Even that is not in my control. But those few hours, I feel I'm in charge. That waking state, I feel I am in charge of everything.
It is a fallacy.
And that creates all the disturbance in the mind. That is what happens. The man at peace knows that free will is not as hyped up as I thought it was, yet I know I have to exercise.
Correct. Thank you.
It's quite, it provides a lot of relief. It's amazing. It's such a relief to know that someone else is in charge. You know, this whole talk of be the CEO of your life, this, that. I mean, I don't know. One thappad you'll get from life and then you'll know CEO of your life.
Can I help you?
Yeah. So, this is for the recording. So,
as you said, people give labels to you or your reactions you made, or you give labels to people like based on what they did to you, what they say to you, right? So that affects your lifestyles also. Like because of what they perceive me as, they will behave in such a way with me. So for that, I have to have some reaction to them or say that this is the limit you can cross or that way. So how do I go with it? Like, I live my life, I don't label them, and I don't let them label me.
How can you not let someone label you? You won't even know they are labeling you. I'll do it behind your back. What are you saying?
No, but how would I react in a way that it would not affect me in like a big way?
This is what the whole teaching is about. This is what the whole teaching is about. That you are no longer affected by labels.
So you have to like have an understanding that it will happen and you just have to go with it.
No. You have to do precisely that which you think and feel you should do, knowing that nobody is the doer of their actions.
Got it.
It's very important. If someone says something about me that I don't like, I have two options. I say, forget it. It doesn't bother me. Or even if it bothers me, it's not worth giving a response to this person. Whatever the way I am made, you see. Or I decide maybe I should express myself to this person and say what I have to say. These are my options. But when the sting of doership has been pulled out, which was there earlier, I find that when I'm expressing myself, it does not have this whole emotional charge behind it, targeted at an individual. You see, that is a big difference. I find ki wo hawa hi nikal gaya hai. You know? That my words are different, the way I'm approaching the person is different. You see, because the me has been diminished because the sense of doership has been removed. Is it clear?
Yes, it's clear.
I have a mandir in my front lawn with Shirdi Sai Baba. My relation with Shirdi Sai Baba goes back many, many, many years. And there is a Shivling, there is Tirupati Balaji statue and Ganeshji's statue. That mandir was started by my mother in 1984 in my bungalow. 3 years, she passed away in Feb this year. 3 years she was unwell. I was maintaining the whole Panditji and everything and doing all the... Now when I sit in that mandir, somewhere around April, May, following you, you had once on one YouTube program put the surrender signal above my mind. My life is gone beyond my mind. You handle it, Baba. So one noticeable change, when I sit in the mandir now and pray in the morning, and the Baba's always in the blessing, giving the blessing position, the statue. Unconsciously, absolutely unconsciously, I'm so lost in my communication with him. I suddenly realize my hands are above my mind. It happens many times, many. It's been happening since June.
Hmm.
Then when I realized, I said, it happened 2-3 times. I realized, very simple, I just surrendered. It's gone above my mind, my life, my hands. I suddenly find them, they're up, and then I realize my hands are up, both my hands.
Mm-hmm.
I start with the namaste position, and then somewhere in the jap or whatever I'm doing, I'm lost in Shirdi, in the samadhi of Baba and his feet and his, and Sai Dhuni or the one opposite in Dwarkamai. And since June, this has been happening. It's not been a big deal to me because I realize I've just surrendered. It's beyond my mind. And the little puny me can't do, he's doing wonders.
Yeah.
He's doing wonders in every aspect of my life. After this surrender, total surrender, unconditional. I want this. If this happens, I'll do this. None of that nonsense.
Hmm.
Things are just happening, and such a beautiful thing happened to me. It has really changed my life a lot. About 2 weeks ago, my elder son had gone to Goa for a business meet. He drove down. And I have a Dalmatian. It's about 10 years old now. So my son comes back next day after the breakfast meet. I say, why don't you stop at Chiploon? Roads are bad. He wouldn't tell me. He said, no, I'm driving. I'll drive slow. He came 2 a.m. the next day in the morning. I got up in the morning to greet him. Papa, I got a gift for you. I said, what? He went to a shelter, one of his friends, He was working in Goa previously for 2 years. Bonito, he went to Bonito's house. She has a shelter behind a bungalow where there are everything from damaged pigeons, crows, snake pit, damaged cut-up snakes, dogs. He bought a beautiful little pup, three-legged, because she's 7 months old now. And when she was 3 months of motorcycle accident, they had to amputate her left leg, front leg. And I looked at the pup, she's hobbling around. We named her Mimi. And she is, it's like, it's something I was dreaming of, getting another dog. And this pup is coming alive and jumping all over my bed. It looked so much happiness in our life. It's such a simple thing.
Mm.
And a three-legged pup would normally be rejected. You know, we want to walk around with a perfect animal. Sure. And she's no breed. Sure. I don't know a breed. It's not like Dalmatian or Labrador or a Pure or anything. But the happiness she's brought in my life, sitting on my bed every night, it's all, and things, other things happening in my business, taking off, everything is, when I realize suddenly in the morning, oh my God, okay. You know, come back.
That's beautiful.
So and it's just, you know, a sharing, yeah.
The thing with surrender is even that happens. We can't do surrender.
I'm telling you, Gautam, I cannot even, it would not be correct of me to tell you what is happening in my life vis-a-vis business, vis-a-vis sitting in the garden in my society. Stray dogs who are so wary about their safety come and snuggle up to my knees. I have kittens coming in my front lawn. Their pedigree food is kept outside. They'll leave the food. They'll come play around my toes for five minutes, then go and eat food and leave. And this has all been happening since January. And these phenomena changes I'm seeing is since about April, May, June. It's not even easily communicable, you know, to sure. express what sure. I'm changes I'm experiencing, good changes. Thank you. Very
good. You see this symbol, this what we are familiar with as hands up, it's in the Egyptian hieroglyphics, which actually means above the mind. That is what he was referring to. Above the mind. Now, this has its limitations. I'm done with it. Like I always say, with this teaching, you stop trying to make sense of life. Life does not make sense. Otherwise, you'll be stuck in the mind. You see, this is the left brain and the right brain are the polarities of the mind. And we have all become left-brained, the logical, thinking, linear mind. The right brain has been put to sleep, the creative brain, the brain which is fresh, nurturing. So when the thinking mind, which is basically standing on the pedestal of doership, starts dissolving and subsiding, then there's a balance. I'm no longer trying to analyze my life away. I'm more in the flow now. I'm no longer polarized. And that is surrender. That is surrender. When you stop trying to really figure each and everything out, it's just not worth it. You're fed up of it. Then the surrender happens. That is surrender. If I find myself saying, I have surrendered, you certainly haven't. No, I mean, it does happen. You feel you have surrendered.
Yeah, it's an unconscious happening. Yeah. It just goes on.
That I have surrendered is not possible because what is surrendered is the I which says I have surrendered. It's really an amazing journey of discovering yourself. And the younger you are, there are so many youngsters here. You know, it takes one very far in life, very far. You're really able to deal with equanimity with situations. That is Ganpati. That is Ganpati. Why do we worship Ganpati first? Why is he the remover of obstacles? Have we thought about it? It is the third eye, not these eyes. The trunk is from the eye of wisdom. See how loving our sages and rishis were. They knew the common man can't decipher the subtle body and how it operates. So they gave the form of Ganpati. Big belly. Laddu achcha lagta hai usse, modak. No. This is the seat of relationships, the Manipur Chakra. Fully expanded and operating is Ganpati. There is a science behind this. What we are seeing is, firstly, 1/5. This is the gross body, Annamaya Kosha. Then there's the Pranamaya Kosha, Manomaya Kosha, the mind sheath. Then the sheath of the intellect. Then the bliss body. Can't see it with eyes. Kundalini, chakras, can't see. mental body can't see, emotional body can't see, spiritual body can't see. We are seeing, it's such limitation what we are looking at. Imagine if you start going around and realizing when you meet people, you're seeing probably 1/10 of them. You'll go crazy, but you are seeing only 1/10 of them. You're seeing the tip of the iceberg. Amazing. That is why they say Mahamaya, the grand illusion. Mahamaya. So don't be too quick to judge, because you're seeing very little. You're judging a painting by just seeing one sliver of it.
I have a question I want to ask. That sir asked about free will. How does a karma play a role when it comes to choose what we want to and what we should and we should not?
You chose to ask this when the satsang is getting over. See, karma itself means only action. It doesn't mean this karma theory which is there. But in a nutshell, what perpetuates karma, one could say, is the sense of doership. When I consider it my action, based on doership, I am perpetuating the karma. And when I consider others' actions, their actions, I am perpetuating the karma. When I see action as pure action, then karma is not perpetuated. I'm giving it to you brief because the satsang is almost over. We can go into it another time. But in its brief form, this is what it means. You see, it's like a tennis match. When I am caught in an action-reaction loop, the karma is being perpetuated. But when I put the racket down, when I put my sword down, as Goldsmith says, then the karma is not being perpetuated. And that is why Krishna tells Arjuna, you're making a big mistake. You think you're doing a great thing by putting your bow and arrow down and saying, I won't kill them because they are my preceptors. But if you truly had the understanding that you were born a warrior, trained as a warrior, all your life has been designed to come to this point, and if you had the understanding that as time, I have already killed them, and you are the instrument through whom it will happen, then you would not have done this. Therefore, pick up the bow and arrow and fight, knowing that nobody is the doer, including yourself. So that became pure action, not my action. Earlier it was my action. I have to decide, this is my action, and I decide to put the bow and arrow down. But it was his destiny to choose only Krishna behind him. Krishna is representative of the source, the higher self, you can call it anything. The voice of that explained it to him, that this is meant to happen. Only you can do it, but you're not the doer. You've been designed for it. And if we find that in certain relationships, if we are honest with ourselves, and we find we are really disturbing someone else's peace, what is that based on? Ask yourself. The answer will be because I have accused that person of doing something to me. That you could call perpetuating the karma. When that game is no longer played, I find I am not perpetuating the karma as the other's action and my action. I am seeing it as a action, a happening. Mother is better.